operator. At this time, I would just like to inform you that today's call is being recorded. If you do have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you. You may begin.
Okay, so this is Liz Gasper. Let's get started, and we have a pretty good-sized group on the phone, so I'm going to ask you to just mention your name when you speak.
I'll do four for you, if you like, Liz.
Yes, please.
Judy Iparaguirre.
Excuse me, Damien Younger now joins.
David Maher, Steve Del Bianco, James Bladel, Stefan von Kelder, Krista Papak, Lee Ilgen, Wendy Seltzer, Bo Brendler, Patrick Jones, Danny Younger, and Liz Gasper.
Did we miss anyone? Okay, great. So let's go ahead and get started. Once again, I'm just going to ask anyone if they want to volunteer to chair this. I'm the de facto chair, but I'm happy to give the reins to another person or co-chairs or whatever that's available at any time. So you can send me a note or you can raise your hand.
This is Ken joining.
Oh, hey, Ken. Good. If you'd like to, it's just kind of a de facto arrangement here. Everyone should have read through the summary of WHOIS studies report on public suggestions of further studies of WHOIS that Lori Kreiner and I prepared. And I had suggested that people identify their favorites, if you will, in emails to me by Friday. I got emails from three people, one of whom, Jordy, you posted yours to the group. Steve Metallitz has forwarded it to me, so I'm going to try to send this out to the full group. And also, Lee, is it okay if I send your note out to the full group?
Of course, yeah.
Okay. Actually, let's find the... Glenn, what's the name of the list so I send it out to the right group? Is it just WHOIS? Well, actually, Glenn, I'm going to send it to you if you don't mind and let you send it out. So,
I send it, fine.
Yeah, thanks. So the Steve Metallitz's thoughts will be circulated shortly, as will Lee's. But I didn't get thoughts from everyone, so I didn't try to compile anything for the call today, and what I think might make sense is to just ask the three of you to summarize your thoughts for the group at the appropriate time. We have a lot to cover and a lot of folks on the line, so I want to figure out a way to proceed that makes some sense. What I was thinking of doing was not getting into the level of detail that would be called for to discuss each study that was proposed for this call, but rather do two things. One is to start off by having some time to discuss as a group essentially Wendy and Ken's proposal, which is not to proceed with any studies at all. There are at least a couple of folks on the call, maybe more, we don't know yet, who have grave reservations about proceeding with any studies of WHOIS. And so I want to start off, since that's kind of a threshold question, whether we proceed to recommend studies or not, with some discussion on that topic with this larger group, and you know, maybe spend about 5 minutes or so on that, or longer if that's appropriate. If that's a real option, then we really need to discuss it and see, you know, how many people in the group have that view. And then I thought, if it looks like there are still studies that people think are valuable to do, in other words, if the consensus is to proceed, is not to not do any studies, double negative, but to proceed with studies or considering studies, then what I'd like to do is spend the remainder of the time divided equally among sort of the seven categories of studies that have been proposed, and talk about the categories and the merits or concerns that you all may have with each of those seven categories as a way of proceeding on this call, so that by the end of the call, the outcome of the call would be a clear understanding of how people overall feel about whether we should proceed with studies of WHOIS at all as kind of the threshold question. And then assuming that there is a consensus of the group to proceed with looking at specific studies to try to at least get a barometer on, of the seven categories of studies that have been proposed, where there is support, where there isn't support, what that looks like, and have some kind of gauge by the end of the call about how people feel. Is that an acceptable way to proceed for today's call? Does anyone have a different suggestion, better suggestion? Okay, so I'm assuming that's okay. Why don't we start then with some discussion on you know, whether it's necessary to or advisable to proceed with who is studies. And I know this is a little repetitious for those who were on the first call, but we really didn't have a full crew on that call, and also everyone's had a chance over the last week or so to mull things over. So if I could ask Wendy and Ken to just briefly kind of state where you're coming from for the benefit of the whole group, and then maybe we could have some discussion on this question of, you know, does it make sense to proceed with more studies of who is.
Hey, Liz,
this is Ken.
This is Tim, actually.
Oh,
and I think when I announced myself, you thought I was Ken.
Oh,
I think
okay.
Ken, I could be mistaken, but I thought Ken said he couldn't make it.
Got it.
That's
okay.
That's what I thought.
Okay, sorry about that. So, Wendy.
All right. I will try to briefly restate my concern, and it's a serious concern, is that this is really more of a political matter than one of lacking the facts to proceed. And over 7 years plus of Who Is discussions, we haven't seen much that has moved people from the positions that their constituencies, or that has moved constituencies from the positions that they came in with, even when we've had individuals who are willing to discuss. When it comes back to constituency-level discussion, it's come back to the same stalemate. And I don't see a way that new data is going to change that. So I would ask the threshold question, can we show about any of the studies that we are proposing that they would, if the facts came out one way or the other, that they would move the political debate forward. And if not, ICANN is many things, but it's not a research institution. I don't see a point to ICANN spending registrant-derived funds on a bunch of studies that, if they won't contribute meaningfully to the policy-making process.
Thanks, Wendy.
This is David Maher. Could I get in the queue?
Sure. And someone just joined, I think, too. Who is that?
This is Steve Metallic. Hey,
Steve. Great.
Liz put me in the queue as well, Danny.
Okay.
Yeah, Liz.
Tim Ruiz put me in the queue.
Yeah, Bo Brendler, can you put me in the queue, too?
Okay. So who was first? Sorry, I missed the first person.
David
Maher. Yeah, thanks. I got to get better at this part. David, please.
Well, just very briefly, I totally agree with what Wendy said. I endorse that position.
Great. Danny?
I took a look at the output from the SSAC, and it seems to me that they are calling for a transition from who is specifically to the IRIS protocols. I know for one that I'm not intimately familiar with everything that IRIS has to offer. I think it would benefit us all to know more about the protocol and what the protocol could imply for policy considerations. I'll profess that I don't have enough working knowledge about what IRIS has to offer.
Was that in the, you said it was in the SSAC?
In the SSAC document.
Okay. So maybe one thing I could do for the next call is ask someone from the SSAC, maybe Dave Piscatello, if he could join and give an overview of that, if that would be useful to the group.
Liz, this is Steve DelBianco. I would say that they should be prepared to speak to what policy measures would be required to adopt the IRIS protocol as well. you know, Jamie's right. It's good to know what's interesting about the idea, but then it would help if staff could weigh in on what it would take to implement something like that.
Who implements that? Who would be required to adopt that protocol?
Well, it's already a standard, so now it's just a question of adoption on the part of the different parties.
But, I mean, who are the logical parties? Is that a registrar thing? Is that a...
Both the registry and registrar thing.
Thanks. Okay. Well, why don't I follow up on that?
I think there's two aspects to that, though, right, Danny? Maybe that's what Scott was trying to point out was, I mean, there's a technical aspect of implementing something like that, and then there's the policy implications that might go along with it.
I don't disagree. You're absolutely right.
Liz, this is Stefan Van Gelder. Can you put me in the queue as well, please?
Sure. Okay. Tim, you're next.
I just wanted to agree wholeheartedly with Wendy and that I have tiny doubt that from what I can see of any of these studies that it would produce anything that would change any position of the stakeholders involved to date. And as such, I don't see what we could possibly gain from the further studies except a lot more expense and time on the parts of those involved. So, again, I agree with Wendy 100%.
Okay, thank you. Bo?
Yes, I actually do not agree with Wendy 100%, but I should also tell you that my own organization is putting a questionnaire in the field probably this week. It will be statistically representative of New York State only because the funding for it is coming from the New York State Attorney General's office. In there we have five questions on who is, because our belief at Consumers Union and Consumer Reports is that we don't necessarily think that there's enough consumer awareness of what who is actually is. I've not been involved as long as you have with this debate. I've only been involved in ICANN for a year, so though I have read the studies that were sent around, I don't necessarily share everyone's frustration on this, and I do believe that we need to get a better understanding of what actual human beings who are not grouped in categories like registrants and registrars actually think about the issue. So,
this is a survey that will go out to consumers within the state of New York?
Consumers within the state of New York, yeah, and it'll be statistically representative of New York State. In other words, like 50% of the survey respondents will be from New York City, and then the rest will be spread out across the state so that it, you know, gives a real sort of statistical representation of New York State's population.
And how would you summarize, if you could, the kinds of questions that you're asking about who is?
What we're trying to find out is, first of all, how many just general consumers in New York State have ever registered a domain name. Then we're trying to find out if they've ever actually heard of Whois and know what it is. Third, if they've ever tried to use it to help them in some sort of fraud issue. Because the overall survey, it's about 32 questions. It's not all on Whois. It's mostly about fraud, so it'll be within that context.
Right. And when would that study roughly be complete? When do you think you'd have results from that study?
We want to try to publish it by June, so I would hope to have the data back in by the end of May.
Okay, thanks.
This is Tim. Can I ask then just a follow-up question on that?
Sure.
As to what, you know, in regards to this group, then what studies, or are there studies that you feel need to be pursued that have been suggested, or just what? Sounds like this one you're doing is going forward, regardless of what this group decides.
Right. Yeah. We're doing it.
So I think, you know, the question is in regards to this group, you know, is there, and of the things that we're actually contemplating now, you know, does it make sense to move forward with those? I think that's the question that we're asking.
Are you asking me specifically or the group?
Well, that's a question that's out there, right? So,
yeah, I think
if you have a response, feel free. But okay, let's move on then to Stefan.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. Just a question, really. I understand from Wendy's comments that she feels that this is a good way of delaying the process even further and generally not doing anything with this whole issue. I'm relatively new to this process as well, so like the other person that spoke of not yet being frustrated by it, I'm not frustrated by it yet. And when I hear Wendy's comments, the question that comes to mind is, if we don't do this study for reasons which do seem to be good in terms of delaying the process further, then what does Wendy advise we should do to get results on the WHO IS issue?
Wendy, do you want to respond?
Sure. My suggestion is that we need to do something to make the issue more salient to everyone, and so I've suggested sunsetting policies for which there is no longer a demonstration of consensus. Nobody can currently agree that the current WHO is good any more than they can agree to change it, and so if we were to sunset the policy requiring registries and registrars to make WHO IS information publicly available, that would give pressure, a timeline and pressure on everyone to come to consensus on something, be it the current WHO IS or something different, or lose it altogether. And I think that that would advance the policy development process faster than studies which do indeed seem to me to be a tactic of delaying while maintaining the status quo.
Ms. Steve Del Bianco, I'd like to get in the queue.
Sure, Steve, go ahead. Go ahead. There's no one else, so go ahead.
Great. So I was I'm with NetChoice, and I'm on the business constituency, and I was the author of four of the study suggestions that were submitted during the public comment period. And I was also a member of the working group on WHO IS for OPOC versus status quo. And apologies for not joining the first call, but I didn't learn I was part of the group until after the call.
Yeah, that was our fault, Steve. Sorry.
Well, I read the transcript carefully, and I've listened to the comments, and I sort of wanted to respond in general. The studies that I proposed that I still believe should be continued are studies number one, number two, and number three. And I'll try to explain why. I've heard what Wendy and Ken have said about this thing being done for optics purposes. Optics are politics. But in my belief, data and findings of fact are far better optics than just, say, blind assertions or unfounded assumptions that are what is responsible for the constituency's position. So it's not just about optics. I really think it's about some facts. Wendy and others have said that nothing in here is likely to move constituencies' positions because they're sort of frozen, unlikely to move things forward. But to that, I would ask you all to realize that registrants don't really care much for what us constituencies are doing. Registrants have gone ahead and moved. They've moved in great numbers to proxy registration, and I think that makes the issue in studies number two and three very salient, particularly Wendy, that's what I'm speaking to, is that I think that makes it salient today because of how many registrants have moved to proxy. I realize that this may not move things forward immediately, but the first time there is an effort to change policy on WHO IS, let's suppose it's the ESAC with regard to an IRIS, when things begin to shake loose and move, I still think we'd be well served to have fact-based findings to steer where we go next. And the studies that I'm speaking of are number one, number two, and number three are pretty finely targeted. Number one is to try to really assess whether there are documented abuses of people's privacy that result from data that came from WHO IS. That was study number one. Study number two speaks right to this proxy, and so does number three. Study number two says we really want to understand types and availability of proxy services that are available, and I think this is a relatively inexpensive study to do. That's to assess the availability, and the third is to assess the demand for proxy registration. Let's really figure out how many folks are using it. And then finally, I said, with regard to people that do use proxies, are the services doing proxy really complying with the requirement they have to reveal the registrant's identity when somebody provides them with evidence of actionable sort of tie a bow around the notion of how big is proxy, how many people are moving there, and are the proxy services respecting the registrar accreditation agreement with regard to revealing the identity when harm is presented to them.
Could I get in the queue?
Yes. Anyone else in the queue?
Okay, can I get in the queue? Again, Stefan Van Gelder.
Yeah, Lee Elgin. I'd like to be in the queue as well.
Then sorry, Tim would like to get two people talked just then. I didn't hear the first. Tim and who else?
Stefan.
Before, I mean, after Stefan?
Lee Elgin.
And who else?
Okay. I don't know when.
I've got Bo, Stefan, Lee, and Tim.
And Jordi, please.
And Jordi, okay.
Thank you.
Bo?
I just wanted to say that I support, I'm sorry I didn't get the name of the last gentleman, but getting data in the method that he just described, we would be supportive of, and we would be interested in seeing real data from those studies. So we support those ideas.
Thank you. Stefan?
Yeah, I'd like to say that I support those as well. Just, I think it was Steve Delbianco saying giving us those ideas just a moment ago. I do feel that it's quite important to get some real data from one of the things that I posted to the list by email was the fact that from Europe, from a European registrar standpoint, we're often in a situation where we're forced by law to work private registration whois, for example, in France, when the .fr was open to individuals, we had a legal obligation to provide a masked whois for individuals, not for companies, but for individuals. And this leads us to find ourselves more and more in a situation where there's one set of rules that works for GTLDs and another for CCTLDs, one set of rules that works if you're an American corporation and another if you're a European corporation. And to be honest, myself as a registrar, I don't have that much data to base my understanding of what I should be doing on. I just don't know if I'm breaking the law in France by providing whois privacy on GTLDs, or if I'm not, I don't have much data.
Okay, thank you. Lee?
Yeah, for those of you who were on the call last time, I'll try not to bore you with reiterating the same points I made last time. I too agree with Steve's position, and I, as you'll see when you have an opportunity to digest my sort of ranking of studies that I forwarded to Liz, and I understand that Liz and Glenn have now forwarded to all of you. I mean, I definitely think highly of Steve's study suggestions. Again, like some others have expressed, I'm relatively new to participation in ICANN policymaking, so I'm not sort of frustrated by the process, at least not yet. I appreciate that perspective. I know that based on Wendy and Ken's comments last time that this process has probably seemed never-ending. It's gone on for, you know, over half a decade to try and shape the future of who is. I, however, in looking back at the history of the quote-unquote debate, do agree that, the debate has largely been molded by subjective criteria, and I feel like at no time more than the present has there been an opportunity to actually obtain a lot of objective data on a wide variety of areas that will shape the future of who is. And I know that in the recent, the last year or two, the debate has largely focused again on the viability of the OPAC proposal. But my thought is that a lot of these studies that are suggested could lead us in a wholly new direction, and could lead us in a new direction that, would take us away from OPAC, which, has not been adopted to date, and maybe take us in a different direction than some of the proposals that have been floated by the IPC constituency in the past and others. For instance, one study that I'm particularly enamored of, and I have to admit that it's something that came from, the impetus for it was a group in which I'm involved, but study suggestion number 15, which has to do with analyzing the use of port 43 whois queries. I mean, That is one I'm interested in, particularly because, I've heard this expressed throughout the debate, but I don't think there's ever been any empirical data to show that this is true. But one thing that I'm convinced of is that many unsavory activities that are facilitated by who has data are facilitated using, by virtue of accessing who has data via port 43 rather than quote internet-based access. So, what my thought is that if that can be proven to be true, that might shape the debate. That might help mold policy in the future insofar as, as a component of a future sort of global proposal on how to deal with who has issues, maybe people end up looking more closely at how port 43 is used and perhaps, realizing that there might be some loopholes there that could be closed.
Thank you.
Want to have rejoin the queue?
Sure. And I've got Tim next.
This is Steve Metallis. Could you put me in the queue, please?
Sure. Anybody else?
Danny.
Danny, okay. Anyone else? Okay. Tim.
The what I don't hear getting addressed, and these are a lot of ideas, maybe some of them even sound like good ideas. I think this, when we drill down, we'll find that some of the data that we're looking for may not be as easily to get as we think, and in other cases we've done it before. But regardless, what I'm not hearing is how will the collection of this data be likely to change the impasse that we've run into over and over again over the last 5 to 6 years. And that's what I think needs to be addressed is, a clear picture or a clear explanation as to how the collection of this data could impact that. And that's what I don't see in any of these suggested reports or studies.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Jordy?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure because I have to leave right now. The point is the following. All those studies can be very interesting, and they may help us to understand, okay, the driving forces of that. But we have an urgency that maybe not right now applying to the big registries, .com, .net, and so on. But it's, as Stefan has already said, starting to put some pressure on the country code TLDs and also GTLDs based on basically European countries. Okay, this is not now an urgency for .com and similar. But as soon as TLDs are doing right now to start offering this kind of data protection, who is data protection services, customers are going to ask for the same on the other domain. So from my viewpoint, the main urgency here is not to debate on which is the best study to start with and such, but keeping in mind that we have an issue which is registries are starting to implement a policy on who and how can access public who is data. This is going to set a de facto standard, and this is going to impact what we are going to try to decide here. So I would propose to understand, to work on what does it mean, and what do we want to solve by debating about the who is, which I understand is providing who is data to who needs to know, and making the life of the registries and registrars much easier, and allowing the registrants to withhold some data if possible, and understanding what this kind of local laws might imply to registries in order to try to find the solution. I mean, studies are important and interesting, may help us decide on the domains that are not right now being under this kind of local data protection laws, but as soon as European countries are going to start to play that, customers are going to start to ask exactly the same on the GTLDs, on the big GTLDs, and we will just be forced to implement and cut and paste what has been implemented. So that's all. I would put the effort on a study how to propose a solution, as I said on the mail sent it afternoon.
Okay.
I have to leave. Sorry. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordy. Wendy.
Thanks. I think many of these sound like very interesting studies, and in the abstract, I too would be quite interested in knowing the answers to some of them. But I'm still, and I welcome new participants to the discussion, but I still don't see where the constituencies to whom the policymaking ultimately comes are going to change their positions. Now, maybe if before we did commissioned any studies, we were to hypothesize about possible results on either direction and get some commitments from constituencies. If the study shows X, then you agree you'll go along with Y. If the study shows Y, you and others agree they'll go along with X. That might move us someplace. But without that, I anticipate that we will spend lots of money and lots of time doing studies, and at the end, constituencies will say, well, that's very nice, but we have these other concerns, and so we don't want to do anything about who is for another 7 years.
Okay. Thank you. Steve?
And I apologize. I'm going to have to drop off in a moment.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy. Steve Metallic?
Yes. Well, look, we're in an area where there are no guarantees. I don't think anybody can say that doing these studies will lead to change in policy, and particularly what Wendy just suggested, it would be ironic if the constituencies bound themselves in advance, considering that we're right now having a discussion about these studies, and representatives of the constituencies who voted to have these studies are saying the studies are worthless and we shouldn't proceed with it. So there's just no way to bind the constituencies in advance or even apparently retroactively on any of these questions. But I do support what several people, Steve Del Bianco and Lee and others, have said, and to point out that one reason why we might have some optimism that some of these studies might lead to, might provide the basis for concrete action, is that they're asking different questions than were asked in the previous go-rounds. This whole issue of the market solution of proxy services or private registration was an issue that was kind of ruled off limits in the last WHOIS task force. It was deemed to be out of scope. We couldn't get agreement to study it or to look at it. And so at least some of these studies, such as the one Steve Del Bianco talked about, are really directed at that. And I think because we'd be asking a new question, we would be getting a new answer. And I think that it certainly would provide a factual basis for whatever was decided moving forward. I can't guarantee that it would lead to any particular change in WHOIS policy, but I think it could provide factual information that would make for better decision-making in this area, because it's asking a different question than was asked in the previous years. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I've got Danny next.
Last week I had occasion to speak with my GEC representative, and was informed that the GEC will most certainly come up with a good dozen or so different recommended studies. With that said, if we've got one major group within ICANN that is going to be calling for studies, then it certainly makes sense to accommodate that particular request. The biggest concern that I have got, of course, is that I don't see the value in establishing a consensus policy on WHOIS. I look at the CCTLD world, in which they are not bound by GTLD consensus policies, and they seem to be doing just fine. I think perhaps in time we should come to the recognition that if we don't have consensus as a community in the GTLD sphere, that we should consider releasing the registries and registrars from their contractual obligations with respect to WHOIS, and give them all independently the opportunity to put through whatever they deem to be appropriate.
I'd like to get in the queue, Liz. It's Steve Del Bianco.
Okay, and then I want to try to tee this up and figure out what to do next. So, Steve, go ahead.
Thank you. Both Wendy and Tim raised a question that I think has already been answered. They asked about the policy implications of a study. And for those of you who filled out the studies, you know it was a pretty tortured affair, right? We had to actually state a hypothesis, an anti-hypothesis, and we actually had to answer the question, how could the study results lead to an improvement in the WHOIS system which could be adopted through consensus policy? So you may not like the answers that are in there, Tim and Wendy, but at least we tried to answer those, and I'll just show one example. On my study number 3, this is, again, Steve Del Bianco with NetChoice, study number 3 was an analysis of compliance by registrars who operated proxy services as to whether their obligation to reveal registrant data when they were presented with reasonable evidence of actual harm. And how could the study results lead to an improvement? Here's what I said. I said if the hypothesis was verified, that is, that some are not adhering to the RAA, then ICANN should improve its contractual compliance efforts for registrars offering proxy services, and that ICANN's response should be proportional to the quantity of registrars and the affected registrants where the compliance was found to be deficient. Because if noncompliance were confined to a very small number of registrars, perhaps not yours at all, Tim, that increased contract enforcement efforts could be limited and targeted to the proxy services or registrars who aren't following the RAA. On the other hand, I said if there were a widespread lack of compliance, then I would say that a policy development process should undergo to amend the RAA to increase penalties for that kind of noncompliance. So we did have to answer the question of what would be the policy implications, and we did our best to do that. It would be better if we stood on the shoulders of the work that's done rather than assume that those questions have never even been thought about. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Liz, this is Tim. Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
I appreciate Steve's explanation there because that was important. And I guess my question is, you know, what the GNSO is tasked to do, you know, because this is, and I think the compliance question and issue is very valid, and I have no problem with that at all. But I guess I'm a little bit confused and misled as to what the ultimate goal is with these studies, and if they're broader than, you know, how do we get back to some of the policy questions that were being considered previously, or is this, you know, something more general, even taking into account compliance, potential compliance issues?
Well, if you recall that when the...
I think where those diverge is important because I think there could be support for one, perhaps, where there isn't for the other.
Right, right. Well, and I don't think there's a clear path there. I mean, the GNSO Council voted when it voted to reject the OPOC proposal. It also voted to examine studies that, you know, what who is studies. I don't have the language right in front of me, but I think you've all seen it, and studies that would inform the debate, recognizing that information was needed and going to be useful, presumably, to further policy activity. And there were some examples, I believe, in the motion itself, or ideas in the motion itself. And clearly the GAC had weighed in on, you know, its ideas previously in the GAC communique that, you know, was sent to the board prior to the GNSO the council acting on this. So I think, you know, there was clearly a contemplation that studies would be useful, that more information about who is would be useful, and that it should be tied to helping define what the next steps in policy ought to be and not be disconnected from the policy at all.
Liz, this is Steve. Can I give a quick response to Tim as well?
Sure.
Steve Del Bianco. Tim, you raised a good question. You wanted to say how would these studies be informative to the quote-unquote big question, which I assume is should we change who is at all? And that was the big question because it was considered for OPOC. And as Danny indicated earlier on the call, that question is still in front of us because it might be that the SX tiered access IRIS proposal is another alternative. So I think the big question is, do we need to change, and if so, to what? And the studies that I proposed, 1, 2, and 3, actually answer that question in turn. One was to say, what's the driver for change? That is, are there abuses? Are there abuses, documented abuses, that should drive us to want to change? And study number two was, to what extent has the market moved much faster than ICANN at delivering privacy-protective services like proxy registration? And I know, Tim, your company's a leader in that. And therefore, number three was, well, to the extent that lots of proxies are happening, we better figure out if the guys who are offering it are truly revealing the registrar information when they're presented with evidence of actionable harm. So I see it as all as sort of fitting together pretty well. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to try to summarize a little, and you all help me, but it strikes me that there is perhaps not a majority, but quite a number of people who have grave concerns about proceeding forward and with studies, and the fundamental concern being that people's views are somewhat entrenched, to say the least, and new data may or may not change the impact that is you know, perceived to exist. At the same time, there are, I think, a number of very strong arguments that say there are some real studies that would inform the debate, and there seems to be consensus in my mind among those who are proposing studies or encouraging proceeding with studies that the study should be tied to a policy question or objective, that it's that there seems to be the understanding that, you know, we're not just doing studies for study's sake or for, you know, information gathering sake, but rather there are specific policy questions that would be helped by the specific information that many of you are proposing be obtained and analyzed and gathered. Is that a fair statement?
Yep.
Okay, so I think, you know, what if we had to report to the council today, you know, I would certainly say that there is a substantial number that are concerned that future studies are not going to generate any kind of meaningful change in the debate. And then there is at least a substantial group of folks who think that the studies are really warranted and that there are new questions on the table and that really may enlighten participants in the debate and create potential paths for moving forward. So I want to leave some time to talk about the specific studies. And, I mean, ultimately it will be up to the council to decide whether to proceed or not. I want to make sure that we acknowledge, as we move on to what the specific studies are that people think are important, I want to make sure that those who feel strongly that we shouldn't proceed with studies understand that we've got, you know, a clear message from you as part of this discussion that, you know, has to get conveyed to the council. And, you know, we need to talk about how we wrap up our work and how we would convey our conclusions as a group to the council. But the placeholder I have right now is that there's at least a substantial portion of the participants here who have real concerns about proceeding with any study. So I want to move on to the specific studies, but without conveying that that is basically saying that's duly noted and that we need to, you know, probably come back to that at some point. I would like to spend the rest of the time today, which is only not much time, talking about the categories of studies that folks think we should pursue, and maybe because we don't have a lot of time, also talk about what we should do between now and next Tuesday to move the discussion further in trying to tee up where everybody is coming from. Right now, the deadline for coming back to the GNSO Council is the 24th of April. That would give us one more conversation if we meet, we continue to meet weekly on the 22nd. I'm an optimist, but I don't really think that's going to be enough time to think through fully as a group what we want to do. We could allow more time on the 22nd if folks are able to spend, say, 2 hours on a call and make it a two-hour call on the 22nd, but I still think we're probably not going to meet that deadline, which is just by way of saying that, you know, one of you that's on the council, I think, should move to extend the deadline, perhaps on Thursday's call, so that we have a realistic time frame with which to work and we don't feel unduly pressured by the time frames that have been set by the council. So I'll ask, I'll throw that out there for one of you, hopefully or several of you to act on. Is that an okay way to proceed? Any concerns?
Wait, okay. Liz, this is Steve Del Bianco. I was just, had you guys done some balloting of some kind that gives you the impression that a substantial proportion opposes any further study?
No, yeah, that's my word, because I don't want to say majority, minority. We haven't done any balloting. I'm just listening to the voices on the call, listening to the voices on the last call. We've got Wendy, we've got Tim, we've got Ken on the previous call, we've got David on this call, four people. Maybe more because we haven't heard from everyone, saying that they have concerns about proceeding. So it's not meant to be scientific. It's meant to be just acknowledging of those. I don't think it's a majority, but it's not just one person.
Liz, can I just, Stefan, can I just get in there for just a second?
Sure, you bet.
I think the important message does seem to be that whatever is done, it needs to bring results this time. Obviously, there's you can feel a huge amount of frustration with some people that there's been a lot of work and no results at all. whatever message we put across, I think it's important to put that message across and say that if we do recommend moving on with studies, at least on some of the groups, maybe one of the suggestions earlier on was that there would be some obligation to act upon the results from the constituencies or something. I think it's important to put that message across that just one more study without any clear undertaking of obtaining results will eventually be considered a waste of time by everybody.
Well, so I'm going to give a personal opinion to that. Just my personal opinion as staff. I think it's going to be very, very hard, kind of picking up on Steve Metallitz's comment earlier, to ask folks in any way to be bound by results of studies that haven't occurred yet, and to speak on behalf of their constituencies to do that. I think my own gut reaction in terms of a middle path, I mean, I totally want to hear from others. It's just my own opinion, but what does sound very compelling to me is that any recommendation that we make for further study, that the policy, the implications, the impact to policymaking, the possibility of changing the impasse ought to be stated as part of the rationale for recommending the study. And Steve Del Bianco is right. That's something we really tried to build into the methodology or the request to each of you when you submitted studies, was to really try to articulate what the rationale for the study was and or is. And so at minimum, I think we have to make sure that studies that are recommended to the council include that component. You know, what is the potential policy impact or benefit to proceeding with that study, and not just, you know, it's good data to have. Other comments on that?
Liz, it's Krista. I have a question. Do we know what type of information would enable people to make a decision or to move forward? You know, what type of data, if we were able to collect data that was meaningful to them, do we know what that data would be for the different constituencies to, you know, move from the position that they've been in for so long?
If I understand your question, I think you're kind of saying, can we build this from the reverse, right? For each constituency to somehow articulate, well, I would change my position if.
Right. If we knew the answer to, you know, X, exactly, I guess it would be somewhat of a reverse engineering. You know, if we understood better about this or how it would impact that, you know, is privacy really being jeopardized or not being jeopardized, and to what extent? Or, you know, I mean, I think everybody has a different position. Well, they do. For different reasons, and maybe if we're able to, through the studies or through some other mechanism, answer those questions, because it is, I mean, I'm new to this process, but I've been in the space and, you know, worked with lots of people in the IP space, and it's just this heated argument that's just gone on forever and nobody's moving, and so it seems like we need to find something. They're missing information that enables them to move or reinforces where they're at, you know.
Comments from others?
This is David Maher. One approach to an answer to your question is that to the registry constituency, this is a matter of principle, and it's not an issue of fact or of law. It's a principle of protection of personal privacy. I suppose it's conceivable that you could take a survey, scientific survey of a lot of people who use the Internet, all of whom would say, we really want our personal telephone number and address to be available to the general public at all times, which is the situation today unless you use a proxy. I find that so totally unlikely that I don't think it's worth spending money on. So the answer to your question is that from the standpoint of the registry constituency, nothing that has been said today could have any possible influence on the basic principle that personal privacy is worth protecting.
This is Beau Brendler. Could I make a comment?
Sure.
I'm speaking also as part of the at-large, and specifically in the North American region. There has been a fair amount of discussion about whether privacy concerns are being overstated, and we've also done some sort of informal canvassing of privacy groups in the United States to try to see if, you know, there is doctrinaire about some of the privacy concerns, as some have seemed to have said in past debates. And the North American Railroad does not at all come down on the side of privacy as the number one concern here. So any sort of characterization of the at-large as being totally focused on protecting personal privacy would not be accurate. But if we get, you know, newer information or better information to work with, or something beyond, you know, just sort of the statements of opinion that have characterized the Who Is debate within ICANN over the last bunch of years, maybe there would be solutions we would be comfortable with, such as, you know, I think a gentleman earlier talked about how in France, Who Is data requirements or data provision requirements are divided into businesses and ordinary human beings. Well, maybe there's a division like that that could happen in the U.S. that would be appealing in that certain circumstance. So I just want to caution against generalizations, especially when it involves the public.
Okay, thank you. We obviously don't have much time left. Let me just make a suggestion for next week and see if this works. Is everyone available? Is anyone not available to have a two-hour call instead of a one-hour call on the 22nd?
Would that be the same starting time?
Same time, only extended an hour later.
Liz, that depends on what is the agenda, because if there's not a likelihood that we would accomplish much in 2 hours, then it's 2 hours.
Yeah.
Haven't spent.
Well, you know, let's talk about the agenda. It's my feeling we dedicated most of the time today to talking about should we or shouldn't we. Which I'm not surprised about, frankly, and I think makes sense and needed to really be discussed. I think we also need to spend real quality time on the study recommendations themselves and trying to get to, ideally, some kind of recommendation or at least understanding of where everyone is on the specific study recommendations put forward. So what I would propose for the next meeting is to go through the 7 categories, to come prepared with, and I know several of you did for today, and I apologize that we really didn't give you the opportunity to go through and share the work you've done, which is unfortunate, but it's just the shower gets eaten up really quickly. But the idea being that we would discuss at least the 7 categories of studies and try to get to some understanding of where there is support and where there is not support to proceed with those studies among those who think that studies should be pursued, and try to winnow down the list to a list that there is consensus in this group should be put forward to the council as a recommendation for which studies should be priced out and further considered.
Anita, this is Steve Delgado. I have a further request for staff.
Sure.
I would say that when you do, for the next meeting, if we were to tee up the ball on the agenda, when we do describe the studies, I think in your summary you do a good job of summarizing the topic of the study, but what we didn't do was bring the policy impact part of each proposed study into the summary, because Tim and Wendy brought that up today where they didn't know that was part of the answer we had to provide. So could you pull that from the underlying studies and bring it up into the next iteration of the summary list that we would work from?
Yeah, I should be able to do that.
Great. And I don't think I can make next Wednesday, but I'll
Tuesday.
Wait. You know.
Tuesday, though, not Wednesday.
22nd, I'm sorry. I will not be available.
This is Stefan. Just to say that it seems to me that 2 hours is a bit too long. I'm not sure we'd get any more results in 2 hours than we would in one.
That's fine. Look, I'm happy to keep it to one on the 22nd. I'm just mindful of how long this is taking, and it's natural that it would Let's say we keep it to one, but are people comfortable providing their viewpoints on at least the categories, as was done by several of the participants for this call, so that we can be prepared to go through those, each of the seven categories, and say spend 5 to 10 minutes on each category within the hour on the next call? Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
That sounds like a good idea, Liz.
All right. So could everyone put their put in priority order the seven categories between now and, say, Friday or Monday morning?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Great. So we will have a call next Tuesday for 1 hour. Everyone, in terms of homework assignments, will take each of the seven categories and put them in their optimal priority order, including any that they feel should not be done. And I understand that we are fudging a little on the specific details of each of the studies within those categories, and that there are opinions within those categories about what should or shouldn't be done in terms of specific recommendations. I'm assuming we can get to that in a further iteration and make sure that within the categories, the specific studies that are recommended are, in fact, supported by all of you. And then I will commit by, hopefully by Monday morning, to pull out the policy benefits that were defined by each of the study submitters and add that to the summary, which I think was my to-do action item. I had an action item from last week based on a question that Danny asked about the economic study that had been directed to be done by the board. And to my understanding is, Dan, it hasn't been done, and I don't have any more information than that other than it hasn't been done. So the concern was that if ICANN didn't proceed with that study, would they proceed with these studies? I can't speak to that study, but it's my understanding that if there was support from the council to proceed with some study or studies in the Who Is context, we would proceed to do this, and that's kind of all I can say about that at this point. So we're at the end of the hour. Unless anyone has any closing comments or suggestions on the next steps, then I'll do a summary and look forward to receiving each of your rank order categories by next Monday, OOB. Any other comments before we close? Okay. Well, thank you all very much for participating, and if you have any further thoughts, feel free to email them to me.
Thanks, Liz.
Thanks.
Thank
Bye.
You. Bye-bye.